Back to the Unboxed broadcast. Today, Dr. Davis and I are continuing our conversation, part two of our conversation, around our journey in overcoming chauvinism. We are continuing a deep conversation that we're having. We're ready to dive in. We're excited you're here. So stick around as we help you unbox the power and potential of your leadership.
I'm Dr. Robert Davis, family life educator and leadership coach. This is my co-host, R.P. Soriano. Soriano attended Johns Hopkins Carey Business School, worked in the financial industry, and was an international consultant before partnering with me to launch Unbox to Lead. Me? Well, I worked for over 20 years as a senior pastor and a community organizer. Then I retired and started a leader's peer support community called Unbox to Lead. Soriano and I have been friends since the early 90s, and with our varied experiences and expertise, we help leaders reach the next level in their leadership. So join us for the next few moments as we unbox the power and the potential of your relationships, your leadership, and your life.
All right, welcome back, everyone, wherever in the world you may be. Dr. Robert Davis and I are continuing part two of our, I don't want to say it's an uncomfortable conversation, but we kind of put ourselves on the hot seat here. We have been discussing our journey, our experiences, our life, and how those have impacted or shaped our view of women in society, and our journey through that, and how we've been working through that, how we've been, as the Three Stooges used to say, a victim of circumstance in our lives, and how we're atoning for that, how we're growing, and how we're changing. So once again, I'm joined with Dr. Robert Davis. How are you feeling about our conversation so far?
Man, I'm enjoying it. It's humbling, especially the last part of what I shared last time, which is, you know, as recently as, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I fell flat on my face again and showed that I still have some of those male chauvinistic tendencies inside of me. But I'm glad that I'm surrounded by strong women who will call me to the carpet on it and will, you know, who will be there with me to help me to grow. That's not their responsibility, but they've been kind enough to assist me in this journey.
Yeah, I would argue that it is everyone's responsibility to help allies, which I think that's what I would consider you and I. We are allies. We want to make the world a better place. We want the world to be a place of equality and fairness. And it's going to take friends, people who know our hearts, people who know our intentions, people who love and care for us, who can help us stay on the right track to this. I mean, if nobody takes accountability for the other, then we're just left all alone to just feel guilty and feel bad. I mean, because clearly people are going to be quick to criticize, but what we need on both ends is to help to be guided and to be encouraged in this journey. Before we jump any further, just want to remind everyone to please like, share, and subscribe to the broadcast. Visit our website as well, where you can get update or you can see previous broadcasts on our, it's hosted in the blog section of our website, www.unboxedtolead.com. Be sure, like I said, to like, share, and subscribe, and to support our efforts to get our message out. So continuing on, Robert, your thoughts on what I just said.
Regarding
just how the importance of the other and to have people in our lives who help us along on this journey, that we're all responsible for each other.
Yeah. And I get where you're coming from with that. And what I mean by it's not someone else's responsibility, I am ultimately, the Serenity Prayer, Lord, at least what we have here at Unbox Serenity Prayer 2.0, Lord, grant me the serenity to accept that I cannot change others, the courage to change the only person I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. So that's kind of, my thinking is that no one can change me. And no one is responsible for changing me. Right. I'm responsible for it. So that's why I'm so appreciative. And I do understand, you're right. As an African-American, when we have allies from other communities
who are, you know, championing the causes that are dear to us, then we do have a responsibility to educate them and help them to grow in their own biases and struggles. But at the end of the day, Robert Davis has to make that decision that he wants to be a better, stronger person who treats and values women as equal human beings.
All right. Okay, so let's move on to the next question here and talk about how we've atoned for our past prejudices, biases, and harm. So let's have that conversation and talk about that, how we both, the things that we've done to atone for our past prejudices, biases, and harm.
So one of the things, and I think I shared some of it just a moment ago, but specifically to atone, is that I have been intentional about trying to surround myself with strong women. One of the things that I've done to atone is I've really been intentional about trying to listen and to understand, because there are things that I am a man, I just don't understand. It's not that I have hatred, or even when I'm not dealing with thoughts of superiority, it's just there are certain things that I don't understand. And let me give you an example of what I mean by I don't understand. I've used this story before, but I remember a few years ago, I was in Aurora, Colorado. I was at one of those streets. It's a side street that you have to, when you turn onto a main street and you're by a red light, but it was like getting close to dark in the summertime. And there was a young lady, she was running, she couldn't cross the street. So she's standing by my car. And I just saw her continuing to look at me out the corner of her eye. And I knew in my heart that this was not racial profiling. You know, I am a lighter complexion, a black man. So you kind of have to look at the texture of my hair. And at the time, my face was shaven. I know my nose and everything else clearly identifies me as of African descent. But I don't think that she was looking at me from that perspective. She was just nervous. And I realized that being a woman, I don't think about this. I don't think about leaving a parking lot at 12 o'clock in the morning. You know, I may think about somebody might try to rob me, but I don't think about someone violating me and then killing me and leaving me for dead. I don't even think about that. It doesn't cross my mind. And so as I've had an opportunity to listen to how women are in different spaces, I've been in meetings before where, you know, blatantly chauvinistic things have been said and it just went right over my head. And so I've sat down with women after the meetings and they're saying, man, did you hear how disrespectful? I've asked women questions like this. This is part of my atoning, is learning. Part of my atoning is trying to learn to become better. So I ask questions like this. How will I, as a man, when I'm in these spaces, because I should speak up when I see these things, how do I know the difference between a man who is just a jerk and doesn't know how to respect anybody? Because there's just some men who just walk into a space and all of a sudden they just want to take over everything. How do you know the difference between a man who is a jerk and a man who is a chauvinist? How do you know the difference? And the response is one of the most beautiful response I got is it really doesn't make a difference. But because of the history of how women have been marginalized in these various spaces, that I should speak up and become, and my antennas should go up. Even if I don't speak up, my antennas should go up regardless of whether this is just a guy who's a jerk toward everybody or he's only this way toward women. It doesn't make a difference. Women are being disrespected. Women are being overtalked. Their voices are not being heard. And so then, as I have a position of privilege, I need to step in and say, no, we need to allow a room for the women to speak. We need to allow room for opportunities. So, you know, it's that kind of stuff. And I know that's, as I'm saying it, it sounds so elementary. But when you come from where I've come from, that was literally like discovering how to split the atom. I mean, it was the most mind-opening thing for me. And it's little things like this, little things like, even though a young lady is much younger than you, you don't call her sweetie. And I know people say, come on, dummy, don't you know that? No, I didn't. No, I don't. I'm going to be honest with you. And so the way that I atone is when I hear these things, I immediately try to correct it. I really am intentional about that. That is something that's important to me. Then there are people that I have offended. I try to go back and apologize. If I can't do it, if I'm unable to do it at the moment, I try to go back and actually call people up and say, I'm sorry. I dropped the ball again. and I'm working. I'm going to do better the next time. You know, I have called women when I was, especially, you know, I'm so distant from them, but when I first gave my heart to Christ, there were young ladies in my community that I had, you know, misled, having them to believe that we were in a much more committed romantic relationship than we were, when I was just out for one thing and was taking advantage of them. And I've actually, when I was able to, you know, circle back around, apologize. So these are just, and there's other things, but I think this gives a pretty clear picture of what it means for me when I say that I'm actually trying to atone, that for me, it means to make peace and to improve, to make peace with the areas that you have been wrong in and the people that you have wronged, to make peace with them, and then to try to improve and to be intentional and thoughtful as you move forward. So that's kind of been my journey. That's the Robert Davis blueprint. And I know that there's more that needs to be added on that blueprint. So I'm of course, I'm curious to kind of hear, because again, you and I, we know we come from, we were born on the same side of the street. So I'm curious to learn some of the, you know, some of the areas in which you're trying to seek atonement.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that when we talk about atonement, the biggest challenge is that step toward atonement, because once you start to realize that your thinking and your actions have actually been hurtful, harmful, and wrong, you start to try to justify that. That's the first thing. You start to justify it. Well, you know, what did this person do that caused me to do that? Or, you know, maybe they did something, or I didn't mean to be that way. That wasn't my intention. And a lot of times we talk ourselves out of trying to atone because it becomes too difficult to take that step. So it can be challenging, but it is an important step. I'm glad to hear that that is a step that you'd been taking. I don't think it would be easy for me to hunt down some people that I have offended, because I've lived so many lives and been so many different places and had so many different experiences that I wouldn't even know where to begin in a lot of places. And I've just left a trail of people that I have offended that weren't just women. So, I mean, it would take me forever to go to atone for everything that I've done. And I was just like Mr. Magooing my way through life. You know, when you're oblivious and ignorant, you have no idea that you're just a complete, you know, dysfunctional person, man. Everybody you touch turns to stone for the most part. But at any rate, yeah, I think that in my life in the past, I have explicitly felt that I could have conversations with women in a certain way because I am a man.
Yeah.
I would have conversations with women. I would not have that conversation that way with another man. Meaning it might be a little, there might be some intimidation behind it. There might be some, you know, there might be some bullying behind it. There may be, you know, some of that kind of nonsense. And, you know, these are things that have kept me up at night in the past. You know, like I said, these are people that I couldn't reach out to now to say I'm sorry to. But once you become conscious and aware, it does. It keeps you up. It makes you think. And it's things you don't want to repeat. But one of the things that I have done is I have thrown myself fully into becoming a feminist. I have committed to that. And I define myself as being a feminist, a full-on ally, whatever it takes, whatever needs to happen. But I am a feminist who still, like you, does not know how to behave in many instances, or who will slip up and make mistakes. But I definitely do not tolerate, or will not tolerate, and will speak up if I'm seeing some type of chauvinistic or sexist behavior. Being in Asia is really challenging because this is a very chauvinistic society. There are, you know, here, women will do things that you won't experience in the US. And some of it has to do with also with class. There's a lot of layers here, so I don't want to get into too much trouble. But there are times, you know, there are times when women will not look another man in the eye. There's a lot of, this is a very multicultural society here in Singapore. So there are a lot of Muslims and you know, a lot of different religions and things of that nature. So there's times where women will not look you in the eye. It's not appropriate to have a conversation with a woman in certain settings. Women will get out of the way of another man. I've been in situations where I just didn't even realize it. And I actually jumped back almost with horror, where I've either been walking, you know, into a mall or something like that. And I've watched, if there's a kind of a woman in the path and I'm not paying attention and I'm just walking at a brisk pace, I mean, they literally will just jump out of the way as if I'm going to backhand them or something. And it's terrifying to see and to experience. And it's made me more intentional and thoughtful about how I even walk, when I'm approaching women in a crowd. This is a very crowded place where I live. So it's easy to kind of find yourself in a crowd of people or a crowd of women. And I have to be sensitive to that. I also have to be sensitive not to impart a lot of my values into a society that, you know, they have their norms. And so I have to be very careful with trying to become, RP, the women's liberator, because yeah, that's not always going to fly. And it can make social situations very awkward, even if the woman on the other side of it isn't comfortable with that. Those are those little nuances that I have to navigate and to be careful with. But I have determined that I am going to be a full-on ally, and any chance that I can to support equality and fairness, that I will do that. And I will not tolerate, bullying if I see it, or, in any shape or form, and will speak up. And I'm also, very supportive, I'm very supportive of my wife's career. And I want to do that because I want my daughters to see that. I want them to see that I am not just sitting back in the background. You know, if she needs help, if she needs assistance, if she needs me to make sure that the girls get ready for bed because she's got meetings, whatever it is that I need to be fully on board with, she has to travel, whatever the case may be. I want their view of a husband, should they decide to get married and marry a man. I want their view to be that this is what they expect. They expect their partner to be supportive of whatever it is that they are endeavoring to do professionally or in their personal life goals. So that's kind of, I think, atoning for me is also, like I said, is just trying to make sure that the life that my daughters experience, that they're getting a male perspective in their life of having what a supportive father and what a supportive husband would look like.
And that was something I was going to say as well. We're talking about what is my, how am I atoning? Is trying to be intentional with the women in my life, my daughters, and my wife, being intentional in thinking about how I treat them, how I show up, it's a struggle. It is still very much a struggle. That's one of the ways, is being thoughtful and intentional in my interaction with my wife, because oftentimes, because the consequences are not as dire and immediate as they would be if you do something out of line in the workplace. They're not as dire in the home, and so we can sometimes take people for advantage and mistreat them, be condescending and things of that nature. But I'm learning, if I can be more respectful towards the primary relationship that I'm interacting with women, which is my home relationship, then that translates into all other relationships. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the ways that I'm attempting to try to atone, for how I've treated women in the past.
All right, so that kind of leads us into and I think we talked about it, our next question here about our internal and external challenges. So let's dive a little more into that. Explain the internal and external challenges you faced trying to grow in the area of valuing and respecting women.
Yeah. Internally, the world was set up for men. Men set the world up for themselves. So, internally, it's giving up the privileges that comes with being a man. That's one of the biggest. It's the number two part of internal for me is this is ingrained. It has been, you know, it has really been etched onto my mind, in my thinking, my worldview and philosophy. You know, the role and value of women has really been etched in there. So that's an internal struggle that I have. I still live in the United States of America, and America is a racist and sexist nation. I said it. I don't care what Senator
Scott, I'm taking it,
or what Representative Jim Clyburn say. America is a racist and a sexist nation.
That was my cue to run out from the conversation. I don't know if you saw it, but I ducked out when you said that. I didn't want my face to be associated. You said it. Folks, there he is. He said it, not me.
Well, yeah. But so externally, in just the very fiber of our society, it is, you know, it's still there. And I think that's one of the reasons why we see such an aggressive overcorrection sometimes. When we talk about, you know, feminism and other isms that are out there, we see a violent overcorrection because it's so ingrained in us that kind of you have to go to the other extreme to kind of counterbalance it.
Yeah.
And so you know, that's it, the externals. You know, when men say things, you know, when there's that locker room talk, man, you know, externally, I guess it's internal and external. You know, speaking up and being the voice that says, man, come on, that ain't cool. Bro, come on, man. We can't talk like that. Man, that is hard.
Yeah, I don't think, I have to admit, my locker room talk can be pretty locker roomish. Let me just say that. You know, but I have locker room talk with my wife. You know, I mean, I say things all the time that are grossly inappropriate and should not. Now, it's usually said in a comical way. I mean, I don't mean it in a, but if someone were to overhear it and not know me, they would be like, man, this guy is just vile and filthy, because there are times when that part of me, that part of that experience, you know, I doesn't feel like I have to reach far back for it. Sometimes it's just right there at the tip of the tongue. But yeah, I agree with you, man, that some of that is that can be a big, huge challenge. I don't think I would ever stop anyone in a locker room situation who said certain things. I think I would, you know, I'd be inclined to join in if I thought it was funny, you know, if I thought it was on the verge of being, you know, just flat out horrible, then I would say, come on, you know, no, not necessary. But, you know, I do walk up to the line. I will admit that.
Yeah. And so those are some of the challenges. I've gotten very comfortable with the world that I live in. And like I said, the world that I live in is made and designed to accommodate me as a man.
Yeah.
And so, and even though I have some other isms, racism and stuff to deal with, you know, being a man, it really does, the world is designed. And so that again is both internal and external challenges that I face. And not, you know, and as you said about Mr. Magoo, walking through the world as Mr. Magoo, that describes me to a T, is not being aware and being too lazy to become aware. You know, so I talked about all of the virtues of how I try to surround myself with women because I want to learn and grow. But there are times when I don't want to learn and grow. I just want to be lazy. Just let well enough be alone. Man, we've been dealing with this for thousands upon thousands of years. You know, it ain't killed us yet. I mean, even though
we're getting close.
Yeah, we're getting close. I mean, you know, hey, you know, leave well enough alone. And sometimes, you know, I struggle with that. Man, I'm just, you know, I don't want to grow anymore. Let's just keep it as it is, kind of thing. Or at least let me stay where I'm at right now. Why should I have to grow more? So those are some of the internal things that I find myself, you know, pushing back against.
Yeah, I think that's been a challenge for me as well. This is one of the reasons why I don't consume as I've started to consume less and less media, because being bombarded and inundated with outrage is a challenge for me. So every time, like you said, you say he instead of they or he and she, and all of a sudden, and I'm not saying this happened to you, but I'm saying I've seen it where there's just complete outrage over someone using the improper pronoun in that instance. And sometimes there is that part start to have some empathy deficiency, because you constantly are bombarded with, you've got to be an ally. You've got to stand up for women. You've got to believe. You've got to. At some point you start saying, like you said, I'm tired of all of this. I'm tired of it. I don't have the energy to mind every single word that comes out of my mouth, every single post that I put on social media, everything that, which, you know, I say that facetiously because I don't post anything to social media, but I don't have the time and energy. I just want to say, look, I'm an ally. I'm a friend. I'm working on it. Leave me alone. Stop bombarding me every time I see someone has done something or has misstepped. They have to be taken to the gallows for it. And it can be exhausting. And what we have a problem sometimes is everything can't be sexism. And everything can't be racism. But when everything is one of those two things, we have no room to be able to see the nuance in anything. Mm-hmm. And so when every single thing that comes out of a man's mouth becomes he's being sexist, it just becomes exhausting. And I know that white friends on the other side of where we are, you know, everything can't be racist. You can't say something and then the response be you're being racist,
or do something. And I'm just about the racist part. There are times when I'm in a store at an airport or something, and I will watch two white people do something that is just unkind to each other. Just, you know, inconsiderate, jerkish to each other. And I say to myself, if that guy or that lady had done the exact same thing to me, would I have thought they were doing it to me because they're black? Because I'm black, rather. Without realizing this person's just a jerk. This person just walks in and gets in front of people, don't care where the line is. This person's just an inconsiderate jerk. And there's some people in this world that are not, you know, they're not, you know, roving racists. They're just jerks. And, yeah. And you're right. And sometimes we have to think about that. We have to be conscientious. And I think that is an internal struggle, not to just turn it off. Not to just turn off.
Yeah, that can be the challenge, because we want to be empathetic. We want to really understand. I think you've done it. I think your conversations and you actually seeking out and asking women in your orbit, help me understand this better. Tell me where I can be better. Help me see what I'm not seeing. I think that's the perfect way to go. I think that's a very mature way to be able to handle that. But for people out there who grew up the way that we grew up, or who grew up thinking the way that we thought about women, who say, I want to try and do better. I've realized that that my way of thinking is not the right way to think. If you're getting your cues from all of the bombardment that is coming to you from media sources, at some point you run the risk of just saying, I can't deal with this. I don't care. You know, and so we have to be, it would be better to turn that volume down and get one-on-one kind of interactions the way you have done, and the way that I have done, and make your changes and create your values and your ethics from that, as opposed to getting it from media sources. But that is one of the things that I think for me is a very big internal, internal and external challenge, because you want to be respectful, and then every time the media does the clickbait thing. They run some kind of provocative headline. They make it to where, you know, you'll see things. You'll see something. I remember when President Biden was nominating the first African-American woman to the Supreme Court. And, you know, you had people on one side of the media basically saying that he had passed over all of these more qualified white men in order to put her in, you know, into to get her nominated to the court. So if you're struggling with equality, and that's the kind of argument that you're hearing, that's a surefire way to start making you less empathetic and feeling like somehow there's not enough crumbs or there's not enough food at the table for everyone. You know, like it should be all reserved for white men first. And once those jobs have gone around 18 times and all the white men have gotten 18 opportunities, then we'll start thinking about, you know, offering it to anyone else. But when we do offer it to anyone else, they are always less qualified for some reason.
Yeah. And let me just say this as well, back to a point you brought up, and I know we're going to get to our last question because at this point, we can never run for public office. We've just crushed our chances. But like you said, that outrage, and that's what I think those who are thoughtful need to really be conscientious. For instance, President Obama nominated as middle of the road white men as you could find in Merrick Garland. And they held up his nomination, attacked him everywhere. They being the opposing party, held up his nomination and attacked him. So now Biden nominates a black woman for the Supreme Court. And of course, they're going to attack him. When Brett Kavanaugh was nominated by Trump, they attacked him. Sometimes it's just good old politics.
Yeah.
No matter whoever you nominate, we're going to attack them. You could literally raise Abraham Lincoln from the dead and nominate him for the Supreme Court, and we would still attack him just because you nominated him.
Right.
So sometimes, and again, what happens if we're not careful is we tune out and we say, you know what, forget it all. I could care less. I'm just going to be me. I'm going to do me. And that's a very dangerous place to be in. So I think you're taking a very good posture and a very good approach, which is, let me just minimize how much of the faux outrage that I subject myself to. Because there was no way someone can say, I disagree with her position on abortion or disagree with her position on whatever it may be, you know, school choice. That's why I'm not going to vote for her. Where it was, you're not going to have a bunch of news outlets saying, oh, they don't do it because she's a woman and because she's black.
Right.
You know, well, that would be fine if they only did that to black women. They do it to everybody. Both sides do it to whoever's nominated. They go at them with guns blazing.
Right.
So I think it's very wise as you just said. Like I said, we have no chance of ever running for public office. So hit me with that last question, and we'll just
out of here. I totally disagree. I think now would be the time to run for public office. The cues that I've been getting is the more dysfunctional and loony you are, the more
maybe a good
better,
point.
The better your chances of getting nominated. Apparently, you know, government has become the insane asylum. So the more insane you behave, the more they're willing to open the doors and let you in.
You
all right. So let's finish this last, when we talk about a male leader here. So what does it mean to be a male leader that creates a safe workplace environment for women?
Yeah. So I think the very first thing that a leader needs to do, and there's a whole lot of things that could be shared. So let me not, I think that this question is most appropriate for women who have been in the workplace for years to help to think about and to give suggestions for. But let me talk about it from how Unbox to Lead looks at questions like this. The very first thing is I have to have guiding principles about how I treat people and how I manage myself in relationships in general. So just, what are my values and principles about how I treat people, how I treat other human beings? And then now that I have those broad principles, and I ask each man who's watching this, who is a leader, an organizational leader especially, have you thought through and written out what your guiding principles are? What are your values as it relates to human relationships? And then to begin to think about, what does that mean in interacting with women? Or how is that applied to my relationship with women. So if I'm a leader, here are my principles about how I treat people on my team. How does that play out when I'm specifically dealing with women, when I'm specifically dealing with immigrants, when I'm specifically dealing with immigrants who are refugees, when I'm specifically dealing with other minority groups? You know, how does that play out in that situation? So we have the big one, and now how does that play out? So, you know, if I value the emotional health of my team, then how does that look in my interaction and my policies for women? If that's really something that I genuinely value, so how does that look? How does that look for refugees, immigrant refugees, or other immigrants? How does that look? And I think that they have to be very clear about our overarching guiding principles, because that informs our specific interactions. Because too often we get caught up into this fad thing. And so the new thing is putting in nursing rooms for at the job so that mothers can go and nurse, or they can pump. And don't get me wrong, that's nice. But that's, again, sometimes we get caught up into these fads, and we just, okay, that what's the new thing that somebody's doing? Oh, well, now they're doing this thing, man, where in each woman's room, you know, they're putting these yoga mats so women can get on the ground and do yoga and stretch if they want to. And sometimes you get to the place where you're actually patronizing people. The bigger question before you start talking about what do I do is to understand, who do I want to be?
Yeah.
Who am I?
Yeah.
And so that then informs how I move forward, versus I went to this seminar, I went to this workshop, they're doing this over at this company, this nonprofit is doing this for their people, I'm going to try to do that now. It doesn't change the culture. It doesn't change you. It's just a new program. And then when that program, you know, runs its course, then you're looking for the next thing. Your employees know that you really don't value them. You're just doing whatever it takes to make it seem as if you do. But man, when it becomes a part of your core and you really internalize your beliefs, you internalize your principles, and then you apply them specifically to women, that is where you begin to create a positive workplace culture.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I would hate to even, I wish I had gone first, because I don't want people to lose any of that. I think that is very important. You know, I want to say this part about who do you want to be? Because, you know, what we're all struggling with here is the environmental factors that have shaped us. And we need to really, really think through, as you said, who do I want to be despite all of that? Who is it that I want to be? I don't want to just do things that placate people. Primarily, you know, if you're around the house and your spouse is complaining about you never pick up your socks, you never do any of this kind of stuff, you don't do this, you know, you just say, okay, fine, I'll just do this, or I'll do that just to shut you up. And the idea is, well, you know, pretty soon you'll forget that you were supposed to do that, and you'll go back to your old behavior. But you need some values here to guide that.
Exactly.
I say this to my wife all the time when we have difficult conversations about my behavior. I say this, and I mean this, I don't want to be the person in this house that is making everybody miserable. I don't want that. I don't want people feeling like we can't say this, we can't do this, because dad is going to explode, or he's going to get upset, or he's grumpy all the time. I don't want to be that. I have to change that.
Yeah.
I have to change that. Whatever it takes, I've got to change it, because I don't want people feeling like, oh, it's so much better when he's not around.
Wow.
I don't want anybody living that way in my house. I don't want anybody living that way, you know, in our organization. So that's a value that I bring. I think that it's important that when we talk about giving opportunities as leaders, when we talk as male leaders, when we talk about giving opportunities to women, it does start with what you said. Who do I want to be?
Yeah.
And if you're just going to give opportunities and you just say, you know what, we got to give some women an opportunity, so let's, you know, next position that comes available, a woman's, you know, got to fill it. I don't think that that's the way to, I don't think that that's necessarily the way to approach that. I think you always have to look for the best, the absolute best to fill the position. I don't think any woman wants to be put into a position just because she's a woman.
No.
You know, just because you're a woman and you're a token and we're putting you in that position, because that leads to all kinds of things. That leads to, well, we don't have to pay her as much because she's a token. We don't have to give her any responsibility. We don't have to give her, we don't have to create an environment where her viewpoint and her perspective actually matters. We just need to put somebody in that position.
Yeah.
And so just as you would want the best person, regardless of their gender, in that position, you should do the same thing. You say, I need to have the best woman in this position, if that's what I want. I saw the assembled episode of the making of Wakanda Forever and the interviews with all of the people who put that movie together. And one of the things that was said about Ryan Coogler, the director, by one of his team members, she said one of the incredible things about Ryan that he does is he surrounds himself with competent and strong women. And the level of excellence that comes through, there's just a level, there's a standard and a level of excellence in all of the women that are a part of this project. And it comes through in the movie.
Yeah.
I mean, it comes through. It shines through that their standard for wherever the standard is, they are looking to go, you know, above and beyond that. Yeah. And so I think that's a very important for male leaders. And I think also understanding, you know, like you said, we may not be able to run for office with some of the things that we're going to say here, but I promise I'm not trying to say this in a stereotypical way, but women do tend to think differently than men. And I think that's a good thing. I think that's a very good thing. And you need that. There are times, you know, just my family would never be where we are. I look at my family as not only a family, but a corporation of business. And I use metrics to think about how we're succeeding in our goals, right?
Yeah.
My wife's thinking on things gives me a perspective that I just wouldn't otherwise have. And as a vice versa, she appreciates the way that I think and see things, but it's a different way of seeing things. And I think as male leaders, you do yourself an injustice if you are not getting another perspective on how to think about a challenge or a situation or a goal that you want to accomplish. You do yourself a complete injustice. I once heard someone make the comment, I hope I get this right. If there are three people in a meeting and everybody's saying the same thing and they're, two of those people you don't need. They're useless. So you really do need someone to give you and you have to be open to that. And it can be challenging because a lot of times women will get shot down and they'll get shot down by men because men just don't understand that they're the other perspectives that are probably being missed, that a woman's ability, especially the multitasking brain that women have, that they're able to see all of how these parts possibly connect way down the line. Way down the line. I can't tell you enough how many times it's happened in my family. I can't tell you how many times it's happened in my wife's position at work, where she has just had conversations with me about, hey, this is where I see things happening, you know, in the organization, blah, 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 blah. And it takes the organization almost a year to figure it out. And they come back a year later saying exactly what she said the year prior. And of course, there's no, you know, she didn't get any credit for it. Same thing with me. She'll say things and a year later, I'll figure it out, or 6 months later. And I'll say, you know what, I'm thinking, you know what, I had this brilliant idea. And it's just like, you know, I'm operating in bullet time, you know, like the Matrix, the bullets are coming at me, very slow. That's how I think about sometimes ideas coming to me. You know, my wife has already figured it out, but it takes a little time for it to reach. But when it finally does, you know, I come off as if I'm the one who has had the, you know, the brilliant revelation or the epiphany. And I just think that we have to do, me, you, and men in general, have to be willing to listen and think it through and to say, I'm not really clearly understanding where this perspective is coming from.
Yeah.
But there has to be, where is the value in this? How can I, you know, how can I start rewiring my brain to see that? Or let me ask more questions. Let me not just shoot it down out of hand. Let me ask more questions. Let me get Let me get some one-on-one time. If it's in a group setting and you don't want to put the person in an uncomfortable position where they feel like they have to challenge, you know, you're challenging them, then pull them aside and say, listen, I think you have something there. I'm not clearly fully getting it. And
that goes to that one-to-one contact that we talk about. That's so important. We talk about all the time at Unbox to Lead. And that is that one-to-one contact. You hit the nail right on the head. That's right. That's the place to do it. Help me to understand your thinking. I'm not getting it. What am I missing?
Yeah. All right. Well, I think we've had a great conversation on this.
Yes.
I feel it's been very cathartic. You know, these things, Robert, and this is what we do at Unbox the Lead. This isn't a commercial. This isn't trying to sell anything, but experiencing it ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, it just reinforces the value in it. You have to have these conversations. You have to have them in a safe and supportive way. I mean, I know I could have this conversation with you and you're not going to respond and say, my goodness, man, you're a monster who should be removed from society altogether. I mean, we shouldn't even try to rehabilitate you. You should be taken straightway to the gallows and be hung outright. You know, I know that I can get support from you. And I know you feel the same thing with me, that we're going to support each other in this journey. That's what a community is all about. That's what a leader's peer support community is all about. Our motto basically at Unbox to Lead is that leaders need more than a coach. They need a community. Exactly. And this is the kind of thing that we want to build and that we are building and that we're excited to bring out to the world, that we can have these conversations. We can help one another and we can, you know, do what we can to make ourselves. The best thing you can do in the world is fix your stuff.
Fix your stuff.
That's the best thing you can do for anybody in the world. Fix your stuff and don't worry about trying to go out. I mean, you can go out and try to change the world, but the best way to do that, fix yourself and do it with a community that's going to be supportive and that's going to help you to grow. Any last thoughts?
And that's how you unbox the power and the potential of your leadership.
All right. So we'll leave it at that. All right. So definitely thank you, everyone, for the time that you have taken. I hope that this conversation has been meaningful and has had some value for you. We want to encourage, if you're a leader of a nonprofit organization and these are the kinds of conversations, these are the kinds of things that you want to experience to help grow your organization in that way, to better understand how to create a healthy workplace relationship, we encourage you to visit our website, reach out to us, and learn more about how to become a member of a leaders peer support community. For Dr. Robert Davis, I'm R.P. Soriano. Our show is produced by Bobby Davis Jr. Graphics and design are created by Damon Mace, and marketing and outreach by John Sedano. We encourage everyone once again to visit our website to learn more about our broadcast and about our services at www.unboxtolead.com. Thank you once again for viewing another episode of Unbox. Be well.
Unbox provides a full-service leaders peer support community that helps high-level leaders become more authentic leaders who build healthy workplace cultures and reach their personal life goals. To learn more and discover how we can take your leadership and your life to the next level, please visit our website at unboxtolead.com. That's unboxed, the number 2, lead.com. Again, that's unboxed, the number 2, to lead.com.